Hi, I'm Caitlin Dubin, and this is the Rural Woman Podcast. I'm a first-generation farmer who married into agriculture. Born and raised in a city, I was so unfamiliar with where my food came from, but I was determined to figure it out. Through my journey into agriculture, I saw women who were strong but humble, often taking a back seat. To me, these women were leaders who deserved a seat at the table. I created the Rural Woman Podcast to share the voices of women in an industry whose stories often went untold. The rural entrepreneurs who live and breathe their work, full of grit and pride. We come here to share our stories, to be in community with each other, to be challenged and inspired, but most importantly, to be celebrated and to be heard. We may not all live, farm, ranch, or homestead the same, but we are all connected. We are rural women, and our stories are worthy of being told. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Rural Woman Podcast. Today you'll meet Arlie LaRoche. Arlie's journey from a small mixed farm in eastern Saskatchewan to pioneering regenerative agriculture embodies growth, sustainability, and a profound passion for food. After venturing into environmental consulting and exploring the world, Arlie and her husband Brett returned to the soil, transforming their passion project into the thriving Farm 140 near Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Farm 140 is a recognized local business offering pasture-raised pork, grass-fed beef and lamb, honey and seasonal vegetables and grains. Arlie sees Farm 140 as more than a business. It's a movement to reconnect people with the origins of their food through agrotourism and farm-to-table dining experiences. I'm very excited for you to meet Arlie and hear her story of entrepreneurship in farming and in food. Before we get to today's interview, I would like to say a big hello and send a warm welcome to our newest member over on Patreon, Katie W. Katie is joining us over on Patreon on our new updated tier, the Barn Brew Buddy. So thank you so much for your support of the show. And friends, if you are a member on Patreon and you have been wondering where your new ad-free episodes are, or if you haven't gotten the latest episode of Maybe You Can Relate on your phone, check your messages over on Patreon. We have updated our private RSS feed, which sounds super complicated, but I promise you it's a super easy fix on your end to get the newest ad-free episodes, as well as Maybe You Can Relate and extended episodes on your preferred listening platform of choice. Thank you again for everyone who supports the Rural Woman Podcast over on Patreon. Your support ensures that the stories of women in agriculture can be shared and celebrated through the podcast. So thank you again for your continued support. Without further ado, my friends, let's get to this week's episode with Arlie. Arlie, welcome to the Rural Woman Podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I am so excited to dive into your story. You have quite an interesting journey in agriculture. So tell us about your journey from a small mixed farm to pioneering a regenerative agricultural experience with Farm 140.
Yeah, so I grew up on a small farm, like you mentioned, near Yorkton, so near the Manitoba border, and it was a mixed farm. It was a beef and grain farm. So that certainly set me up with a strong connection to nature and a passion for food and a love of animals and all that good stuff. But after I graduated high school, after traveling for a while, I went to college and I studied water resources engineering technology at SIAST. And so I pursued a career in environmental consulting for a while. So I did that for almost 10 years and I really enjoyed it. And, the main reason why I decided to go down that path was because I had concerns about the environment and just really wanted to do what I could to help that. So that's what took me down that path. But I found out after I worked in that field for a while that I just didn't feel like I was getting the full, you know, experience of making a difference. I just didn't feel like I was doing what I set out to do. And at that same time, around 2007, is when my husband and I moved out to a small farm just outside of Saskatoon. And we started kind of a hobby farm there, but we started doing some homesteading, growing a garden and growing a couple of animals just for our own consumption. And it was kind of around that time also when I discovered people like Alan Savory, who just show how regenerative agriculture can be beneficial to the environment. And so I just felt like what I could do at the farm for the environment was probably more powerful and impactful than the work that I was doing in the environmental consulting world. And so that's kind of what pushed me to come back to my farming roots and do that instead.
So during your time as an environmental consultant, what really kind of maybe pushed you over the edge? You said that, you know, you weren't quite getting what you thought you would get from your career as an environmental consultant. What officially drove you back to agriculture?
I mean, if I could pinpoint one thing, my husband and I did a workshop, a three-day workshop with Joel Salatin in Alberta. And the title of the workshop was called You Can Farm. And so, yeah, that really inspired me. And I just came home from that workshop and just decided it was time to change what I was doing. So,
and your farm that you had moved to, you had mentioned that it was, you know, kind of a smaller hobby farm. So going from your hobby farm to now, you know, wanting to scale it, was it a gradual process or was it something that happened rather quickly?
No, I would say it was a gradual process. I had children during that same kind of time. There was a lot of change happening in that time of my life. And that was when I have two children. So I was working during both of their younger days. But when I went back to work with my second child, I was just working about half time. So that allowed me to be with my young children, but it also gave me some time to start building a farm business while I was still working in the environmental consulting world.
So tell us about your current farm and your current operation and what you are producing off of the farm.
So we do grass-fed beef and lamb, and we run those two animals together. They require the same infrastructure, so it works really well. We do that in a planned grazing or amp grazing, whatever you want to call it. There's so many different words for it, but we do the rotational grazing of the cattle and sheep together, and that just really helps to regenerate the pastures and make them really, really healthy. And then we also do pasture-raised pork. And we have a small flock of laying hens. I've had a couple of different iterations of chickens over the years. At one time, I had a pretty big flock of laying hens, and I realized I didn't really like that. And then I had some broilers for a few years in a row. I did broiler chickens, and I realized I didn't really like that either. What we found works well is just like a small, you know, 30 hen flock that my kids can kind of mostly take care of. And then that gives us fresh eggs and just enough to sell to some neighbors. And we have a few other kind of side programs going on. We have honeybees on the farm that a friend of mine mostly tends to. And we have a pretty big market garden area that someone else tends to. And then we do agritourism at the farm here. And we do some grain farming and haying. We actually have two farm sites. So we have this farm near Vanscoy, which I call our homestead. This is where we live and this is where most of our livestock spend their time. And then we have another farm site that's about an hour and a half away from here, north of here. And that is where we do some grain cropping and some hay production. And we do take our cattle out there in the summer to graze as well.
So prior to you coming onto your farm, what type of farm was it? What did they grow or what did they raise there?
I would call it just mostly an acreage, and then they had horses here.
So from your time there, you know, you've talked about what you've learned in terms of regenerative agriculture and taking care of the soil. What changes have you seen in your land and your property over the time that you've been there with the practices that you are doing?
The main things I'm noticing is just the amount of forage that our pastures are growing has increased. When we first took the farm over, there was a lot of overgrazing that was happening in the pasture, and so that resulted in a lot of bare ground. And then the water infiltration as a result wouldn't have been very good. So just the coverage, I guess, of the pastures has increased. And then with that forage coverage increase, that just means that our carrying capacity has also increased. So we can just run more animals on this same land base than we would have when we first took it over. The other cool thing that I've noticed is just an increase in biodiversity of all things. Like, we have two families of foxes that live on the property now and have for the last few years. Just the diversity of the different plants that grow in the pasture has increased, and lots of different birds showing up. We're doing a study, or we're involved in the Living Labs project, it's called. They send lots of researchers onto our farm and collect a lot of data about different practices that we do. And one of the studies that they do is a bird survey, and they found quite a healthy diversity of birds that live on our farm. So yeah, those are kind of the main things that stick out as beneficial.
Yeah, that's really neat. You mentioned that you have started doing agrotourism on your farm. When did that start for you?
I would say that I did my first farm dinner in about 2015, if I was to guess. And so my husband and I had been traveling in Hawaii, and we stumbled upon a farm that did a farm tour followed by a lunch on the farm, and the ingredients for the lunch were grown there. And so we did that while we were on holiday, and I just found it so impactful and like such an amazing experience. It was so memorable. And yeah, when we got home, I just said to my husband, we have to do that. That was so cool. That was such an experience. So I, at the time, was working with Aiden Kitchen and Bar. They sadly don't exist in Saskatoon anymore, but I was good friends with Nathan Guggenheimer there. And him and I partnered to do this crazy farm dinner idea that I had. So I wanted to grow all of the ingredients for the dinner. And so I kind of had to tell the chef, this is what I have available to you in August. What can you make with it? And then he designed a menu based around those ingredients. And at the time, I didn't have any infrastructure for agritourism. So I had to set up a party tent and rent all kinds of things like tables and chairs and glassware and plates and everything. So it was a lot of work, but it was really fun and exciting. And my customers really enjoyed it. They were really excited about it. And we all had a lot of fun. So at the end of the night, I thought, okay, that's something that I should probably do again. So we did it that way for about 3 or 4 years. And then actually Saskatoon Tourism approached me and kind of encouraged me to do those types of events more frequently. And I said at the time, you know, if I was going to do those types of events more frequently, I would really need more of a dedicated space, and I would need to own some of these things rather than renting them and just have more permanent infrastructure to do it. So that is kind of what prompted me to start building what I refer to as our event area. So it consists of a couple of kind of converted grain bins that are like gazebos now. And there's a summer kitchen out there and, you know, a permanent washroom and stuff like that. Whereas we were having to, you know, set those things up for each of. Yeah, now it's much easier to do an event at the last minute and everything's just kind of there and ready to go.
Yeah, that's awesome. I always thought it was kind of funny. I didn't grow up in agriculture. I didn't grow up on a farm, but when I would go on vacation with now my farmer husband, I'd always think it's funny. Like, we're coming off of a farm and we're going somewhere to somebody else's farm for our vacation. And I used to think it was weird, but now it's like, anytime we go anywhere, it's like, what kind of farm can we go to?
You can always learn something from visiting anyone else's farm. It doesn't matter what type of farm it is and if you what type of farm yours is, whether it's a different style of gate latch or a different handling system or a different breed of animals you didn't know about. Like, I just think visiting other people's farms is such a great idea.
For sure. Well, and as a person who might not have any connection to a farm, to be able to go to somebody's farm and have that immersive experience, like you said, that's something that you don't forget.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You can help support the stories of women in agriculture to be shared through the Rural Woman podcast on Patreon. What is Patreon? It's a membership-based platform that helps fund and support creators like me to create and produce content like this that you all love. New to the Rural Woman podcast Patreon is ad-free listening and patron-only bonus content and exclusive episodes. Learn more and join the patron gang today at patreon.com/the Rural Woman podcast. So since, you know, 2015, you've been doing these farm dinners. What has been the reaction that you've had from your community?
It's been really positive. Yeah, we have some people that come every year. It's kind of like a tradition for them to come with a group of friends, or, you know, we have one couple that always comes for around their anniversary. So that's kind of neat to see those repeat attendees. And then lots of people, if they have friends or family visiting from out of town, they'll bring them, because that's a really cool thing for someone from a more metropolitan area to experience. So yeah, it's been very positive. Lots of people tell me, you know, I don't have a single connection to a farm anymore. You know, like, I feel like people around my age, maybe it was more normal for almost everyone to have an aunt and uncle or a grandma and grandpa that had a farm that they would visit, but that's no longer the case. And it's definitely not the norm anymore for people to have a farm to visit. So especially kids, they really don't have access to one. So that's why I want to offer them my farm to give them that perspective.
Absolutely. So besides being able to cook these beautiful dinners for folks on your farm, how else are you marketing your products off of the farm?
I have a website, and that's where most of the sales of my products happen. So most of my sales are bulk sales, I guess you could say. So I'm selling a side of pork, a quarter beef, a side of lamb, that type of thing. But I do have a little store on the farm, so people can make an appointment and come out and shop in the store. And then that way they can just buy the cut. But yeah, like I said, most of my sales are happening on the website. And then when you purchase on the website, you have the chance to either come out to the farm to pick up your order or have it delivered to Saskatoon. And then, for the marketing of that, I just mostly use social media to post about that. And then I do keep a newsletter that I am very bad for getting regular emails sent out, but I try to send something out about once a month with that.
Marketing is a full-time job on top of being a farmer, which is a full-time job on top of all of the other full-time jobs that we have as entrepreneurs and farmers.
True. And yeah, I always think I should or I need to spend more time marketing, but it usually falls to the bottom of the priority list.
Yeah, absolutely. So with having people out to your farm, does it ever surprise you about the gap between what people from the city know about farming versus, you know, what they do know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of cute. People, when I do the farm tour, they almost always want to share their farm story or their farm experience. And it's really, you know, it's nice and it's normal to understand like why they want to relate that way. But yeah, it's also unfortunate that it's so limited, and a lot of people just have lots of questions that I'm super happy to answer. And especially for the kids camps, I noticed that there's a really big knowledge gap there. But the kids are so open-minded too. Like, It blows my mind how they want to try every single vegetable out of the garden. They are so happy to learn about anything and everything. And there's no bad questions, no silly questions. And they seem to gobble up the information.
For sure. Well, and I think, and I've talked to many women who are educators and also in the agriculture space. If kids are learning about food and farming and these practices, they are some of the best teachers, because then they can go home and they share with the rest of their family what they learned from a farm. And that's been shown to influence how their guardians and their parents shop, because now they know this information.
Yeah, I can see that. Actually, one thing that we started doing with the kids' camps is that on the last day of camp, the kids are welcome to give their family, their parents and siblings, a tour of the farm. So they actually take their family around and show them everything and show them what they've learned that week. And yeah, the parents are usually learning a lot that day too.
Right. And I always find it interesting, like what kids find interesting on a farm. I'm thinking of a woman that I've interviewed on here before. Her name's Charlotte. She's from Chatworth Farms up near Edmonton. And she says it's really funny when the kids come to the farm, or when they did virtual farm tours, the things that they were drawn to. And I know even on my farm, when kids come out, we have cows and we have goats and we have all of these things. And they're really interested in seeing like the farm cats. Like they just want to go see the cats. I'm like, don't you want to go see a goat? Like you don't have a goat in your backyard, but you know, it's recognition. They have cats. They could go see the cat, right? So
exactly. It's like I was saying how they're kind of drawn to the thing that they already know a little bit about. So yeah, that makes sense.
So you've actually taken your, you know, offerings off of the farm, even further off of the farm, and you opened your own restaurant. So tell us about your restaurant and that experience and how it's going today.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess the restaurant kind of was born out of those farm dinners as well. I mentioned that I started doing them with a chef from Aden. And then at the time I was also working with the Hollows, which also sadly does no longer exist in Saskatoon, but it was another fantastic restaurant. And the head chef there was Scott Dix. And he took over doing the farm dinner for me in about, I don't know, 2018. And the night that we did the farm dinner with him, it just went so well and everybody was so happy. And Scott and I and Brett is my husband, we all just got on really well. And then my husband and I had thought it could be interesting to do our own restaurant. And meeting Scott, working with Scott a little bit, we just thought if we were ever going to do one, this would be a great guy to do it with. So just started kind of having those conversations with Scott, as he understood the restaurant industry far more than my husband and I did. And yeah, that's kind of how the idea was born. And then we brought on Lacey Sellinger, who is our general manager and sommelier. So the four of us own the restaurant together. And yeah, it's just a hyper-local restaurant. So we supply the restaurant with pork, beef, and lamb, and as many vegetables as we can. And then what we don't supply them, they have probably about 50 plus other vendors from Saskatchewan that they're getting all the other ingredients for. So yeah, it's a very, very farm direct restaurant.
Very neat. I think it's great when there are folks in the ag industry that are so connected in the restaurant industry and that local food being there. I know as a consumer of a lot of restaurant food, I love going out during the winter when we're not in the field and I'm not having to be on the farm and cooking. It's basically like my winter vacation is, you know, eating out and trying all of the new restaurants that open while we can't get off of the farm. The restaurant opened in 2019.
That's right.
So how was 2020 for you as a new restaurant owner? I'm just curious.
Yeah, probably just as you could imagine. It was certainly a very challenging time, maybe the worst time in history to open a restaurant. But I mean, obviously the ever-changing regulations and demands on restaurants were a huge challenge for us. We kind of had to reimagine and reinvent the restaurant several times throughout that period. you know, maybe one of the most challenging things was that we just didn't have any reliable data about the restaurant. We didn't know what to expect at all because we were not operational for a full year before we were forced to close from COVID restrictions. So, you know, we had no data about what is a regular June look like for us? What could we expect for traffic in here? We just had no normals to look at. So just have no idea what to expect. It's really hard to staff and really hard to order food for things like that. So yeah, it was challenging to say the least.
Absolutely. I look back at it now and it's hard to believe that it was 4 years ago now. It seems almost like it was yesterday, but it seems like a long time ago. It's a weird mix. So I'm curious, there are many different types of farmers and ranchers that listen to the podcast. When it comes to supplying for restaurants, what are some tips or things maybe that you didn't know when you first started when it comes to that type of supply, that, you know, any perspective that you could give?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have a lot of other farms ask me about what it's like to supply restaurants. And a lot of farms, I think, romanticize it a little bit because it, from the outside, maybe seems like an easy or convenient market for farm produce. And it kind of can be, but it can be very challenging too. So I remember when I first got into supplying restaurants in a pretty, for me, felt like a big way. I remember a chef committing to a whole bunch of pork. And, you know, he told me he wanted X number of pork per month. And that was more than I was used to processing and growing. And so I scaled up my pork production to meet that. And then it was going fine for a couple of months. And then a couple of months in, the chef realized, whoa, that was actually way more than he needed. And he needed to cut his order in half. And I had already grown the pigs for that. So, you know, and what can you do? You can't force him to take these pigs that he doesn't need. So in the last minute, I had to imagine and come up with a new market for these pigs. And pigs are not like beef and lamb. I think pigs are kind of like a ticking time bomb. Like when they're market weight or when they're ready to be butchered, they got to be butchered. You can't just let them hang around on the farm for 3 or 4 months finding a market for them because they just get fat. And they also eat a ton of very expensive feed while getting fat. So your profit margins just go up in smoke if you let them linger. Whereas, I mean, a grass-fed beef, if it sits on the farm for 4 more months, it's just going to get a little bit bigger and it's going to be fine. But yeah, that was kind of a big learning moment for me, was the riskiness of committing to these types of contracts. I guess I say contracts, but there was no contract. It was just a verbal agreement. And that's probably what got me in trouble. But knowing the restaurant side of it, I mean, the chef's not going to commit to that either because he doesn't know what he's going to sell either. So it's risky. It's risky.
Right.
Let me just put it that way. And another kind of lesson is, like, we get all of our animals processed at a licensed, inspected butcher. Like, we don't process our own animals. And so I do a lot of coordinating with the processor and the end user, but they typically don't communicate directly just because I find that that works better. But sometimes it is better for them to communicate directly because a chef might have in his mind what he wants and ask for it. And then I'll ask the butcher, and then the butcher will tell me his answer. And everybody thinks that it's going to go one certain way, but then you deliver it and they're not happy for one reason or another. So yeah, it can create complications. Let's just put it that way.
Right. Well, and I think if you don't know the industry, right, and it's interesting for your perspective to know both sides of the industry now, right? As a farmer, you might not quite understand what the restaurant is going through, and vice versa for the chef or the restaurant to not know, you know, they may have committed to all of these pigs, but now they don't want them. So now what do we do with all of the pigs?
Right. That's right. Yeah. And a couple other just like small little things is that Don't show up and try to talk to a chef right before supper or right before lunch. And they're super busy people. So if you email them or text them one time and they say, yeah, I'm interested, and then you don't hear back from them, you should try again, because they're talking and dealing with so many different people all the time. Like I know lots of farms will say, oh yeah, I reached out and they seemed interested, but I never heard back. And it's not that they don't want your stuff. You need to make it very easy for them.
Right. That almost sounds like talking to a farmer right before seeding or a harvest. Yeah. Don't try that. Yeah. So what are the plans for the future when it comes to the farm and your agrotourism and the restaurant, all of the things?
Yeah, probably the biggest change that we're going through this year is that my husband is pulling back from his town job a little bit. So he's been working full-time in the city this whole time. And as of this year, he's going to pull back to 50% in the city so that he can work at least 50% on the farm. And his main passion is on the grain farming side. So we've been acquiring more land at that other farm site that I mentioned that's about an hour and a half away. So he'll be doing more grain farming. And we do a kind of a different style of grain farming up there too. We do polycropping and intercropping and no-till grain farming up there. And then we have the animals so that we can have animal integration on that grain land as well. And I briefly mentioned that we were working with that Living Labs project. So we're excited to get a lot of sampling done this summer. So they'll be sampling on that grain farming land as well as the homestead here where we live. And they're just trying to demonstrate some of the beneficial impacts of certain practices like polycropping, planned grazing, animal integration, and perennials. I can't even remember all the different beneficial management practices that they've identified, and it's like a producer-led type of a study, which is really cool. It's a real life study. A lot of these research programs, they exist in a controlled test plot type of environment, which is great. And there's a reason why they do that from a science perspective, but you know, it doesn't take into account real life situations all the time. So this is an exciting project that we're working with them on. And yeah, I guess that's going to have to get edited out, that little pause there, because I don't know what else to say.
That's okay. Do you have any like dinners coming up or the agro like farm camps, that kind of thing?
Yeah, we have our 2 weeks of kids camps this summer planned as usual. I haven't quite decided on the dates, but they happen during the summer break, and I'll be releasing information about that as soon as I have it ironed out, which should be, you know, within the next month or so. And I'm sure we will do, in the summer, we typically do about one public farm dinner per month. And then we do private ones as well. So if you wanted to have a retirement party or a staff barbecue or a family reunion or something, you can just privately rent out our event space for those types of events too.
Very cool. That is a lot of things to do in a relatively short growing season that you have in Saskatchewan.
It's true. Yeah, I always say I'm really grateful for the seasons because, you know, there's no way I could keep up the pace of summer busyness. I love summer, but I am so happy when fall and winter come and I have a really obvious excuse to just chill out a little bit.
Right. And it gives us the opportunity to sit here and share your story. Well, in July, probably not happening.
That's right.
It has been really great to get to know you, Arlie. My last question for you is a question I ask all of my lovely guests is, what is the most rewarding part about being a rural woman and a farmer for you?
Wow, that's a good question. I guess for me, it all comes back to the food. I love being able to just eat directly off of my land. I know where my food is coming from. I know that it's very nutrient dense because it's grown in healthy soil. And I just feel like having that close connection to where the food comes from gives you this kind of almost emotional or spiritual connection to your food too. That's just another form of nourishment that can't quite be captured in a nutrition label. And yeah, I just feel really grateful for that connection and to be able to give that connection to my children too, and just have them grow up with that really strong understanding of where food comes from.
Absolutely. Food is a powerful thing. And when you have that extra connection to it, I think it tastes even better.
I think so too.
For the listeners who would like to connect with you after the show, where can they find you online?
Our website is www.farm140.ca, and Farm 140 is spelled out. It's not numerical. So Farm, O-N-E-F-O-R-T-Y. And that is also our Facebook and Instagram handle, is Farm 140. And those are kind of my main methods of communication. And if they want to sign up for our newsletter, they can do so on our homepage of our website.
You want to mention the restaurant too?
Sure, yeah. The restaurant's called Odla, and Odla is a Swedish word, and it means to farm or to grow. And the website for Odla is odla.ca, and that is also our Facebook and Instagram handle.
Perfect. And I will link all of those in the show notes so people can find you and connect with you.
Fantastic.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. That was nice chatting with you.
Thanks for listening to the Rural Woman Podcast. The Rural Woman Podcast is more than just a podcast. We are a community. A huge thank you to the Rural Woman Podcast team, audio editor Max Hofer, and admin support from Kim and Co. Online. A special thanks to our Patreon executive producers, Sarah Riedner from Happiness by the Acre and Carrie Munven from Laystone Farms. To learn how you can become a Patreon executive producer or other ways to financially support the show, head on over to wildrosefarmer.com to learn more. Be sure to hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you listen to the podcast to get the latest episodes directly on your playlist. And if you are loving the show, please be sure to leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or any other platform that accepts ratings and reviews. You can connect with us on social media at The Rural Woman Podcast and with me at Wild Rose Farmer. One of the best ways you can support the show is by sharing it. Send this episode to a friend or share on your social media. Let's strengthen and amplify the voices of women in agriculture together. Until next time, my friend, keep sharing your story. Did you know that you can get this same great episode of the Rural Woman Podcast ad-free? I get it. Listening to ads during a podcast isn't always my favorite either. But in order to keep the lights and coffee pot on here at the Rural Woman Podcast Studios, they are necessary. I am so grateful to each and every one of my sponsors, but if you yourself would like to skip the ads while supporting the show, consider joining me over on Patreon. Patrons of the Rural Woman Podcast get ad-free episodes starting at Tier 5 on their podcast player of choice each week, plus some other great benefits. Find out more by heading to the link in today's show notes to learn how you can become a patron through Patreon.